So we'll go ahead and get started while people drift in. I'm Walter Potts.
Heather.
Heather Eisen. We work together in the solutions team, and we develop, along with several other people in our group, all the fire solutions that we're going to be covering today. So we want to make sure that we're in the right place, but we're here to talk about solutions for fire departments. Is that right? That's what you guys are here for? Okay. Okay. So we're in the right place. All right, so we'll just go ahead and get started here a little bit. Here's what we're going to be talking about for the next hour and a half or so. We're going to give you a good overview of the Fire Solutions Program. How many people have been to the Fire Solutions website? Okay, one person, really? So it's a good thing, too. So it's a good thing that's what we're going to cover, because I think that's important for you. By the time you leave, you at least know where to go to find some solutions. We're also going to be reviewing some of them. I'll just kind of give you a high-level overview of some of the solutions we've developed over the last few years. And I look around the room, I see some familiar faces. Some go back a long way about some solutions we worked on 4 or 5 years ago. And each year we add to these solutions. We're also going to be drilling into one of them in particular, the fire incident maps. And Heather's going to give us a good demo on that one so we can drill into that one, get into what it is, how you use it, how you configure it, and so on. How to share those fire solutions, and then how you guys can get involved if you choose to. So that's basically what we're going to cover. We'll leave some time at the end of the session for Q&A. And I think we're the last session, so we won't be pushed to get out of here for the next group. So that's where we're at. All right, first thing I need you to let you know is ArcGIS Fire Service, ArcGIS for Fire Service, is part of the local government group. And that's important for you to know. It's one community. There are other communities that are part of local government, but we view the fire service, that is fire departments, municipal fire departments, as part of that local government group. And the reason that's important to you is because you get a list of all these different solutions that we're going to go over here in a little bit that work together. We leverage the entire platform, and the whole ArcGIS local government group creates those solutions. So some of them that you're going to see work on a desktop. Some of them work on mobile devices. And we have scripts that we include in them that Heather's going to show you. And we give that information out that we generate analysis out to other users on all kinds of devices. So there's quite a wide variety of deployments for these different solutions that we're going to show you. But they're quite a broad spectrum, I guess. Okay, so the ArcGIS for Local Government, then, this group that we work in, is really just a series of maps and apps that help solve specific focused problems. So that's what we're trying to do. Is take the generic software, whether it's desktop or maybe it's ArcGIS Online or a collector on your mobile phone or whatever it might be, and we try to configure those apps so they can solve a specific problem, in this case, in fire service. And earlier I mentioned it's part of a community because every one of these solutions that we work on, specifically here in fire, have been developed in cooperation with fire departments, some of your colleagues around the country. And some of them I'll try to mention as we go here. And that's really important because one guy told me the other night when we were over at the National Security Summit that we would really starve to death if we didn't have users telling us, well, this is what we need or this is how it needs to change, because then it can continually be a living organism. It can grow and expand and so on. All right, so each one of these solutions that we're going to show you are configurable, so you can modify it as you need to for your organization. You can extend them as you need to, so you can write additional things on it. And hopefully, if I remember, we'll get to GitHub and show you where you can go and get code if you needed to. And they're free. That's the big thing. They're free to you. If you have our software, you can just download them. Or in some of them, you don't even have to download. You can just start building them and start using them. We'll show you how to do that. And they're fully supported through tech support, so you can call tech support and they'll give you help on them. The other thing that's really important about that before I move on is that we support them. So, you know, like, for example, just to pull one out, flood planning. We did that when probably 6 or 8 years ago. I can't remember. Quite a number of years ago. In response to some flood planning, what was it, 6 years ago? It's 2010. And we have updated it ever since then. So every time there's a new release of the software, we go through a certification process where we make sure those scripts still work with the new software. And if they don't, then we have to make, you know, changes to it. The reason that's important to you guys is because that means that we are maintaining those applications. You don't have to maintain that custom code. So if you configure that application to do something that you want it to do, as long as you're using that app, that Python script or whatever it might be that we give you, then it'll work on 10.3, 10.4, etc. And the other thing that's important to you, for you to know about that is, since you'll be just downloading one of the configurable apps that we give to you and give it and you deploy it, on your platform and your servers or whatever. It means you're not writing custom code. And when you're not writing custom code, you're not going to get RevLocked. Do you know what I mean by that? Anybody been RevLocked? A few of you nodding your head. So, you know, you get a third-party application, it doesn't work on the latest release, so you got to wait and so on, you're RevLocked. And so this allows you to move forward as you need to. So when you're ready to move from 10.3 to 10.4, these applications will be supporting on that. So that's important. It's a valuable thing because your IT department doesn't have to be in the software development business. They can be in the deployment business for these applications. The next thing is, I said before, it's community users. We try to leverage best practices that we can gather from different users around the country. It's been very, I would call it prolific in the fire service specifically, much more so than in the other industries. In the fire service, we've had some really good, I call them partners, but they're users that collaborate with us from around the country. And so that's been very helpful, and we're able to leverage that quite a bit. And then down at the bottom, there's a network of services and partner offerings. There are a couple of other organizations, some of them you'll see downstairs in the exhibit hall, that we work with as well that leverage some of these solutions as well. So let's just kind of move on. Some of these, if you've been in this session we've done for the last couple of years, you notice this is the same slide that I show every year. That's because the mission has not changed. Everything stays the same. We still want to accomplish the same things. That's what this solutions, local government solutions group is all about. We want to be able to deliver these maps and apps quickly. So that helps you so that, you know, your chief comes in and says, hey, I need a map that does this, and I need it by tomorrow morning. You can say, you know what, I was at a session and I learned how to do that. Let me give it a shot. So it allows you to get up and started, get up and running quicker. It allows you to stay current, as I mentioned before, avoid getting into legacy technology, getting stuck in that. You can deploy a geospatial platform a lot easier. They can be leveraged by many. I don't know why it's flashing on there, but and leverage the collective knowledge of the entire community. So, for example, when we did a couple years ago, two, 3 years ago, we did the target hazard analysis with Chesterfield County, Virginia. Some of the people out on the West Coast, they weren't familiar with it. So I went to Rancho Cucamonga and I said, hey, got this new solution. And they retrofitted it to do what they needed to do. It had a lot more to do with wildland fire than with structural fires. But that was okay. They could do that. So there are some things that we can leverage from each other. And then we do that with less staff, less budget, and technical expertise. That's a big important point here. We want to make that so it's just easier for you to deploy. And as I mentioned to you a little while ago when I was talking to you, some of the deployment methods that we talked about 2 or 3 years ago have been modernized, and we'll show you that in a little bit. Okay, so the turning point for us in terms of accomplishing that mission and getting this stuff out to you was ArcGIS Online. And the reason for that is it helps us to get out of just the desktop. So you got ArcGIS on your desktop, or, you know, ArcMap, but you need to be able to get information out to the battalion chiefs or the, you know, chiefs and so on, operations maybe. And how do you do that? How do I deploy those things out? Well, ArcGIS Online can be leveraged to do that. We'll show you some examples of that in a little bit. And so that was a really important aspect of it. Another thing that's important is that the needs have changed. Besides the technology has changed, so has the business needs. You can see a couple of examples. It's kind of fleshed out on this map here, but you know, historically, a lot of times when we first started this about 5-6 years ago, we saw a lot of our users still doing paper maps and complaining about keeping those paper maps up to date. And so then things have changed. Well, we're doing desktop, but now people want to do. I was just talking to a fellow downstairs from Burbank. I don't know if you're here or not, about doing pre-incident planning with a collector on your mobile device or iPad. And another one was about doing hydrant inspections. Again, I'm out in the field. I need to be able to do, you know, pressure tests on my hydrants, and I want to be able to get that information in, update it, operations dashboard so the chief can see which ones have been inspected and which ones have not been inspected. And a third one is home safety checks. This one is for things like carbon monoxide, monoxide testers and smoke detectors and things like that. You want to be able to go through a neighborhood where you've had a lot of fires and say, all right, you know, we're going to try to... You know, we can't avoid the fire, but at least we can make sure that they get out in time. So we're going to check those things. And that application allows you to go through the neighborhood and check on each house that you've, visited and so on. So it's a lot more mobile, even in the fire department, than it used to be. And we see that lots more and more as time goes on. What that's resulted in is a suite of new solutions, which really, these are just applications, for fire. These are each one of these is a separate solution that you can download or use for just the fire department. And I've got them in categories, but they don't have to be in those particular categories, like, you know, managing the district boundaries. I was just talking to a guy the other day, and he said, yeah, this is a problem for us because You know, well, it's probably my hometown because we annexed the town where I live in Stillwater, Minnesota. They annexed part of the county. So guess what that did to the fire department? We can't reach the rest of the city in 4 minutes. So we got to build a new fire station. So $20 million later, we got a new fire station, moved everything to the center part of that part of that area, right? Well, we have to change the administrative boundaries then to be able to meet our codes and so on. Address management's another problem. In a session that I was in this morning, I think it was you, right? We're talking about addresses. So there is a solution in here for just managing addresses, keeping those addresses up to date, because that they get out of date. If we move over, I'm just going to go through these, so I'm not going to belabor this anymore. All right, so let's just pop in here. And I'm just going to go to the solution site, hopefully. All right, first thing you need to know, you get to it through here, solutions.arcgis.com. That's the main thing you want to learn from this session. That's how you get started here. Once you get there, you can select, you get into local government. As I said before, we're part of local government. And then you can, well, let's just do that real quick. So here I'm on local government. I'm just going to scroll through here. Here's all the other communities like land records, water utilities, public works, and so on. Click on fire service, and now you're in the fire service page. This is where you get all the solutions for fire. As we scroll down the list here, I'm just going to go through these a little bit, a high level, tell you what they are just so you know about them, since most of you haven't been there. This first one on the list here, we're going to go into much little more detail a little bit. It's the latest one that we've added, so I'll cover that one last. But let's start with the target hazard analysis. So the purpose of this particular solution is to allow you to be able to analyze your property information to find out which of those properties could be a potential hazard or risk to responders or to the public. And so you can specify criteria. And what we've used in there is NIPRS codes to be able to say, well, what is the occupancy type? You know, based on the occupancy type, what's the risk going to be to it? How big is the building? How much fire flow or water do we need to put a fully engulfed fire out in that particular facility and so on? So there are several different factors. These are user-defined factors that you can put in. It uses a spreadsheet to grab that criteria, and it compares it against your parcel assessor's database. So whatever the latest data is, whatever the occupancy code is from the assessor's office, and it compares that spreadsheet, that criteria, to that parcel database, and it evaluates it based on that criteria and gives you a score. There's much more details to that than that, but that's the gist of it. And then it scores it, and then you can color code it based on the score. What it allows you to do is visualize which ones of our properties are higher risk based on our own criteria, whatever that criteria might be. So as I said, when we started this with Chesterfield County, they were dealing with hazmat things, you know, whatever. When Rancho did it, they were dealing with the fringe areas right along the San Bernardino Mountains there. They wanted to be able to find out, well, which of these properties are high at risk. So they had different, because they have different jurisdictions, they have different types of risk factors. But both of them were able to use the application because they can configure it for their own needs using their own criteria. So that's a little brief on what that one does. You can click on Learn More for every one of these. I'm just going to do this one time because they're all the same. When you go into it, you get an overview for it. Go down here and select on Requirements. Tells you what you need for that particular solution. Tells you what you get with it. It also gives you a little history about what's new for it. We've added, made some changes to it. You'll see that in here, and you can just scroll down the list. If you click on Get Started, you get an overview. It tells you what you need to do. Some of them have more things in here, and some have less. And there's also some additional help, like understanding your criteria. This is a pretty important one because this analysis one is pretty complicated. So this is a good thing for you to study. And then it also gives you some workflow. So it tells you, okay, first I got to do is load my parcel data, gives you step-by-step instructions about how to do that. And then also, okay, next thing I need to do is populate my hazard criteria, tells you how to do that, summarize the values, and so on. And then if there are tools that we've supplied, like Python scripts or something with it, it also tells you a little about each one of those tools so you can have some information about how they work and what they do. And again, they're all supported. Okay, so let's go back to our fire.
Do you want to ask some old questions?
Yeah, go ahead. Just go ahead. Fire off.
I noticed that you rely on the local government information model.
Yeah.
Do some of these rely completely on you using that or just partially?
Good question. Yeah. So did you all get this question? Can you hear it? So I'll repeat it. We have this thing called the local government information model, and it's used through all the local government solutions. Not all of them, I shouldn't say. I should say that they're not anymore. But it's common. It's one data model. And every time you download, not every time, but when you download like this one here, you would get the local government information model with sample data in it from Naperville that we've created. It's not their data. It's not the city of Naperville's data. It's data that we mocked up because they gave us permission to do so. That's why we use Naperville. So we mock it up so then you can run it to see, well, this is how it's supposed to work, and then you can put your own data in it. Now, when you go to put your own data in it, there's a couple choices you have. In this case here, you can go to our website, and there's a place where you can go and download the schema and then just use our schema. Now, when you do that, you'll get all kinds of things for stuff that has nothing to do with fire. Some of them, like parcels, in this case, would. Or maybe addresses of wood or something like that. But there might be some in there for Parks and Rec, for example, that you don't need. That's okay. You don't need to fill that one out, right? And each one of the apps will tell you which layers you need for that particular solution. Now, I have to say something since you've asked the question. Some of the new solutions that we're going to show you don't use the total local government information model, and they just use a couple of feature classes. For one might be fire hydrants. All I need is fire hydrants. So you could just use that one. Another thing that I'd like to show if we have time is the service catalog. About five times today, I've showed people about the service catalog. How many people know about the service catalog? That's what I thought. I want to make sure before you leave here, even if it's late, that you leave here knowing that, because you can go in and grab service definitions that we've created, and those are feature services in ArcGIS Online that we've created. They have the schema already built. Domains are in there, so you can make it from a pick list. Symbology is all created based on the NIFR standard. So it just gives you a great place to get started. And all you have to do is just go into that service catalog, grab whichever feature service you want. Like this morning, I was showing somebody how to do damage assessments. Grab that feature service, put it in as an empty feature service in your org, in your organizational account, and start making a map. It's empty, it's ready to go. Because with fire hydrants, it's got to be your data. You know, it doesn't do you any good to use sample data from somebody else. So it's a quick way for you to get up and running. So, did I answer your question, Phil?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that's enough about the target hazard analysis. Let's just go back and look at some other ones here. These two are kind of old ones, but they're oldies but goodies. Okay, so years ago we met with Colorado Springs Fire Department. One of the things they told us about was they have a problem with the station wall map. So, in their stations, and commonly, in the fire station, there's a big wall map, E-size plotted wall map, right next to the driver's side of the apparatus, right? So the call comes in, put one finger on where you're at, one finger on where the call is, he looks, traces it, he gets in the truck, and they start taking off. At least in his mind, he knows where he's going. So that wall map then can get out of date, you know, as time goes on, you know, years go by, you know, it gets tattered maybe the data inside is all up to date, but it gets tattered, we need to create a new one. So they ask us, can you help us with keeping that wall map up to date? So that solution, that's what it addresses. It's a desktop application, allows you just to generate, basically what it does is it generates a PDF that you can send to a plotter and update your map, right? So it pulls in your parcels, your streets, your addresses, whatever you want to put on there. Same is true for the run books. Everybody know what a run book is? So fire run books typically go in the apparatus behind the seat of the driver or in the fire station. You might have a run book in there. Sometimes they'll have a big steel cover on it that's waterproof, fireproof, and so on. And it's just a page, right? So it shows a block or something like that, or a few blocks for each page. Same thing is true there. Well, streets change, addresses change, you annex parts of the county like they did in my department, and so on. Things like that happen. So then what do? Well, you got to update page 253. And by the way, when I update that one page in this big old thick map book, I got to put a copy of that page 253 in every apparatus in every fire station, right? So if I've got four apparatus and 20 fire stations, that's a lot of updates to that map book, right? Or maybe I got to update several pages. So that's what this application does. It allows you to generate a new map book. You can just do certain pages or you can do the whole thing if you want to, right? And it allows you to use your own indexing system. So a lot of you that I've spent time talking with, you have an index page. When the call comes into the station, it says, you know, station 21, we have structure fire on page M53 or something like that. So you're going to look at page M53 and then it gives you the address and so on. So if that's the way it is in your department and you're using that, then you want to be able to use your same map index, map pages, to be able to accomplish that. So that's what that application does.
Does that have the capability to turn labels on and off?
Turn what off, on and off?
Does it have labels on and off, such as your street layer?
Yeah.
Turn the street names off. I get a lot of requests for blanks for the station
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, street, yeah, street, yeah, good point about labels. So it's map book, you know, they give you long, especially if you got really long street names, or they curve a lot, like they do these days. So, yeah, you can turn it on and off. So what it basically does is that it's just a desktop application, so you have all the capabilities of desktop, like labeling, and then it generates a PDF, so you can turn it on and off. But back to that question about labeling, when you, a lot of times in a map book, at the back of the map book, you want to have an index. You guys got indexes in your map books? Yeah? Few of you do at least? Okay. So that what it says is that if I'm going to the 100 block of Cherry Drive, what page is that on? So that's what that index tells me. Well, that's fine. You know, 100 block of Cherry Drive is pretty short. It's going to fit, you know, an 8.5 by 11 map page in my map book, right? But some of these street names, I don't know who is naming these streets, right? Have you seen some of them? It's like, how in the world can you even pronounce it, you know? So, you know, it'll have east, west, you know, south, first street, or whatever it is. And you need to have all that information on there. And so sometimes those labels for those street names can overlap, because in a map book, you know, you have so many columns in there for each one of those map pages, you know, what street is it on? So you may have to decide whether you want to turn those labels on or off, and there are some options now. Allison, when she did the updated the script, she gave us some new options for how we want to do it, so if we want to do two columns or four columns and so on, things like that, just to deal with long street names. Basically, that's what it was. Okay, any other questions before I go on?
So in the map book, does it show just the delta so that you know you need to replace page 253?
No, you need to know which page you want to. Yeah, yeah. It might help you find the ones, but it's not its purpose. Its purpose is just to generate that new PDF, right? Okay, then pre-incident planning. I was just talking to somebody this morning about pre-incident planning. This is a desktop-based application that allows fire departments to go out and identify hazards and risks that are associated to an individual property. I'm going to call it a property. And the way that works is typically, fire departments, when you're not responding to a call, they send the shift crew out to go out and check out an area. Maybe you have a college campus or a shopping center. And I have been on a rig, and we went out to a shopping center and said, okay, we got to map this place so that if we got an incident that's called here, we know which store in the shopping center we need to go to. We know where the shutoff valves are. We know where the control panels are and all that kind of stuff, right? And so what it allows you to do in a desktop environment is to be able to go in and create polygons around each one of those complexes, we call them, like a shopping center or a campus of some sort. And then inside each one of those complexes, you can create building polygons. When it does that, it gives it an ID. Now you assign the shift crew to go out in the field. They go out, you publish that to ArcGIS Online, they go out with a web map, they got collector on their device, and they can go out to wherever they've been assigned to go to that day, and this happens quite a bit, and they can say, okay, here's where the Knox box, here's where the key box, here's where the control panel is, here are the standpipes, the FDCs, all that stuff. All that has symbology. And then symbols have been created with cooperation of NAPSA, if you're familiar with them, National Association of Public Safety GIS. They create symbology, they pull it in from many different sources, and we try to leverage their symbology as much as they have available for us to do. So that's what we've done. Then you can use that out in the field to be able to update those pieces of the plans. This one's going to get updated, so it's going to be a much more of an integrated workflow as we go on. So I'll just leave it at that. Inspection fire flow inspections. This is for hydrants. Now, this is not an engineering inspection of the hydrant. It's fire flow. You want to know what's the pressure coming in, you know, through the infrastructure, through the lines, the fire lines, you know, to that hydrant. How much water am I going to get out? So you get a pre-test it, you know, and all that stuff. And you want to measure that. And you want to be able to say, this has been inspected or it's not, or it failed, or, you know, give the ones that failed to the public works department so they can go out and do whatever they need to do. So it's basically all it is just a configuration for collector. You want to go out in the field and be able to collect that information. The same is true for these two. Conduct fire safety surveys, I talked about earlier, it's just being able to go out, knock on the door, can we check your smoke alarms, replace the batteries, all that kind of stuff. When you come outside the door, you can say, you know, I checked it, yep, it's good to go, or no, it's not good to go, we need to do a follow-up or something like that. We call it home safety checks or because fire safety survey because you can do it for many things. You don't have to do just smoke detectors. One guy told me, he said, while we're there, we're going to collect some other information too. Like if it's a hoarder, and there's stuff all over the place, and we're going to get trapped if we have to respond to a fire here. We want to know what we're dealing with here before we go in there. So they might, you can use it for however you want to. It's a simple configuration, so if you want to add fields or layers to it, you can. But again, it just uses collector to go out in the field and collect that information. And by the way, now you can do things because collector can use it, be used offline as well as online. When you get back to your Wi-Fi, it can sync back up, and then you can update that information. AED collector is the same way. You're just going out, you know, checking your AEDs, making sure that they're operable and all that kind of stuff. And then manage community events. Okay, so this is a big one. We just replaced this one. It used to be called the Special Events Planning Template. And we've replaced it, as you can see here, with 8 new applications. It's a big story, so I'm going to save that for later. I'm going to be doing a session down in Public Safety Demo Theater 13 tomorrow afternoon on this particular one, and I'll just tell you what it does. But basically what it allows you to do is to be able to get ready for a community event, special event in your area. Parades, you know, races, whatever they might be. It's a growing industry. Events in America are growing because they're money makers for local municipalities, right? They're bringing a lot of money. And so there's a permitting process, there's an approval, there's a review, then you have to go into planning, and if it's a big event, you have to do the incident action plan. Anybody do that? Good. So what we're going to be doing next with this is we're going to start working on incident action plan. If any of you want to be involved in that, please see me afterwards. It'd be fun to work with you on that project. As well as operations. We have to pull in feeds for major operations. You know, if you've got a big event, which happens around the country quite a bit these days, if you have a big event, you need to have lots of things going on. You've got a lot of different, not only fire, but law enforcement, EMS, SWAT teams, you know, maybe even federal agencies if it's a big event. So that's what this one's all about. So we'll just kind of move on here, if I can catch up here. There's some other ones that I just want to kind of briefly mention to you, tell you what they're all about. Hurry up here. I got two of them going. Okay. Evacuation notices, again, so this is in here, and this is helpful for times when you need to, you know, make sure that you're letting people know if you're in a flooded area or something like that, just notifying them. There's administrating areas and managing addresses, things like that too. Kind of, I call those administrating tasks that we need to keep data up to date, stuff like that. So there's quite a few in here. There's more. If you want to drill down into here, there's actually more than I just to show you. But just click on the learn more, drill down into them. The reason I went through this is I wanted to let you know that most people don't even know this exists. It's free. It's supported, you know, technical support will answer your calls on it, and we maintain them. So if you can use them, even if you can use one of them, you know, it's a win for you. So it's why we built them. Okay, so that's a little bit about that one. Now let's go back to the first one that I skipped over, fire incident maps. As I mentioned before, this is the newest one that we've created, and the problem that this addresses is, okay, I got fire incidents coming in from my CAD system, right? Once it becomes a valid incident, it's pushed into my records management system. Sometimes they're one and the same. It goes into my record management system, or RMS, and it's stored there. Chief comes to me and he says, you know, I want to be able to see that stuff. We spent like X million dollars on that RMS implementation. Can we get that data out? I want to see a map of things. And traditionally, this is a problem. And the problem is one, you got to figure out the schema that's coming out of the RMS because it doesn't match up with what you need it to be in the GIS to make your maps out of it. You got to deal with, you know, the fields and the mapping and all that kind of stuff. You got to deal with symbology, and you got to deal with addresses that don't match and all that kind of stuff. So users were telling us, is there a way that we can, you know, help this process somehow? So that's what this thing addresses really for you. And so what I'm going to do is just pop into the try it live, and then I'm going to turn it over to Heather here just so you can see how you would do it. But idea here is I've got a database, you know, RMS, SQL database, Oracle, whatever you got. I can get that data out. I have a script or something I can run, export it to a CSV file. I got a schema. I'm going to read that CSV file, pull that CSV file into ArcGIS, ArcMap, into a file geodatabase, a layer of my file geodatabase, import it. Schema from my RMS has to match that layer, so I have to create that layer from that schema that's coming out of my RMS, and then publish it to RTS Online. So the idea here is, some of you that might have been in my session this morning, you saw that little diagram they had. So, okay, you know, every Sunday morning, I schedule an event that runs on my Windows task scheduler. It goes and reads a configuration file that she's going to show you how you create in a few minutes here. And it pulls in that CSV file that's coming out of my records manager system, imports it into a predefined feature class that's empty, puts it in there in a schema that I need it to be, and then it publishes it to my ArcGIS Online or server, portal for server, and it uses my login and password, because that's how I set up the configuration file, pushes it into a feature service that I've already created and ready and waiting for. Since it's in a feature service, it can also feed multiple web maps, and that's basically what you're looking at here. Each one of these is a separate web map. The same feature service feeds all these web maps. So when that script runs, out of your RMS grabs that CSV file, feeds that one layer in your file geodatabase, in ArcMap, and then pushes it into ArcGIS Online, it's feeding each one of these web maps. And then you can just like ping back and forth between each map to see what it does, right? So I have some of them that are by incident type, incident cause, response time, all that kind of stuff. So you can look at it. You can. It's a live map, so you can, you know, it's not live data, but the map is interactive, I should say. So you can see what information is in there. And you can also get some information about it. As it says here, it uses the National Fire Incident Reporting System for the codes, you know, whatever your code was that comes into your RMS. So if you're using NIFRS, it's going to be really easy, pretty handy for you to do. So that's an overview of what, did I kind of summarize that pretty good, Heather? I hope I did.
Yeah, I can go over
you can
a few.
Go from that. All right. Any questions sure. before I turn it over? Yeah.
On the records in your CVS file, is there a limit?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Is there a limit to the number of records in the CVS file that this thing can handle?
No, let's see. I think at one time we were doing like 1,000 at a time, but I'm not 100% sure if that's still a limit or not. Yeah, so you'd want to run it every whatever, so often, however often you want it. 7 days, 24 hours, whatever.
Is there not a workflow that you can go directly from the RMS system to your SDE database?
To SDE? Yeah. Without going through the CSV file?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that it's more automatic?
Yeah, so instead of exporting out of your CSV, instead of exporting out of your RMS to a CSV and then bringing it in, instead of doing that, you just want it to go directly into yes, there is a workflow. So depending on which RMS you have, some of them, like let's say you're using SQL. In fact, I told you guys this morning about Steve Rivero downstairs at Orland Fire. This is what he did. He replicated a table in SQL because his data, his RMS is using SQL, SQL Server. So he just simply replicated a table in SQL Server. And then as soon as the 911 dispatcher submits that incident, it goes into that replicated table. He's got a new incident in, right? So then he can just read that table directly. If you do that, you don't need this. If you can do it that way, you don't need to import them and publish them, right? Because then you can just have it published to your RTI. But that's live, right? So that's a nice thing if you need to do that. The difference is that's live. That's not doing a historical analysis, which is what we're doing here. This historical analysis is saying, okay, where are the incidents that were arson over the last 30 days? Where are the ones that the response time was over 8 minutes? You know, make a map of those. Instead of pulling in each incident live, you want to look at the whole, and you know, the whole district, and you want to see what type of incidents you have or where they were and so on. So it allows you to do some other things like, well, how many RMS call, or EMS calls are we getting versus structure fires, or you know, accidents or swift water rescue or whatever that might be. So it's just different. They have two different purposes, but there's a way that you could do it that way. And if you pull everything into your SQL table, then yeah, you could use this script to read your SQL table if you have all of your incidents in there. You know, like the last 30 days or whatever it is, 7 days or whatever. So you could do that one too.
One other thing is that you could talk to the group about your fire agency, but you want to share your information with your adjacent fire agencies.
Yeah.
What the opportunities are.
Yeah, that's a good point. So if you're pulling that data in and you're pushing it into ArcGIS Online, and it's got to have a home. You know, that web map and those apps got to have a home. So I create a group, and then I can invite who I want you to come to that group, right? Or you could give them your feature service too. You know, and they could just read the raw feature service if you want. Okay, is that good? Are you okay?
Yep.
So we'll switch you over. What are you for?
Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect. So when you download the fire incident maps, you'll get a zip file, essentially. And when you unzip it, there's the maps and geodatabase folder, as well as a shortcut to the online help, which Walt has just shown you. So if we open up the maps and geodatabase folder, you'll see that there's a incident mapping toolbox. So that contains tools for importing and publishing incident data. There's the fire incidents map document, which is used to publish the fire incident service to either ArcGIS Online or ArcGIS for Server. There's the scripts folder. So this is the Python scripts that you would be using to import and publish your incident data. There's the sample data folder, which contains the fire incident sample. And like Walt had mentioned, that can come for your, from your computer aid dispatch or your record management system. So if I opened up the Excel or the CSV file, you'll notice that there's the incident ID field. So that's a unique identifier for each incident. There's also data for the address of each incident, as well as description and cause, and date and time fields. And the reports folder is basically going to be used to write any kind of log files that the import and publishing tool, which we'll look at in a bit, will be written to. And then there's the ArcGIS for Local Government geodatabase with content from the city of Naperville, Illinois. So when you open up the fire incident map document, you'll notice that there's several layers. So essentially, each of these layers we're going to produce a single map from. So there's the incident type, which is basically used to identify incidents based off of the NIFRS code. There's the responding company, which is used to identify the fire company or EMS unit that responded to the incident. There's the incident cause, so what actually caused the incident. Response time, which is the time it took to respond to that incident, as well as location for fire stations. So first off, you want to publish your incident data. So I'll go ahead and log into my ArcGIS Online organization account. Oops. And then from there, you can just go to Share as a Service. And then publish a service. I'm going to keep the default service name. And then ensure that the capabilities are set to feature access so the import and publish tools can actually write that, update the incident data constantly. So you need that capability set. I've already published my feature service, so I'll go ahead and just close this. So once our initial feature layer has been published to ArcGIS Online, we can go ahead and start using the import and publishing tools. So the first tool is Configure Import Incidents, which Walt had mentioned. Essentially, what you need in order to run this tool is a configuration file name. So this is going to be the name of your configuration file. And then the incident spreadsheet, so that can be a CSV file or a Microsoft Excel spreadsheet that contains your incident data. Then there's the incident feature class, so this is typically a point feature class of your incident data. The reports directory, so where any of the logs, log files from the import and publish incident tool will be written to. And then there's the unique identifier field, which I had mentioned before. So you need to ensure that this field is both in your feature class as well as your Excel spreadsheet. And then you can identify the location type based off of address information or XY coordinates. And depending on which one you choose here will influence the parameters that are available to you in the location information section. And then optionally, you can choose to publish your service to ArcGIS Online or ArcGIS for Server. Again, depending on which option you choose will influence which parameters are available to you in the service information section. You can also choose not to publish to either ArcGIS Online or ArcGIS for Server. You can just leave this blank and it will just publish that information to your incident feature class. So let's say we ran the tool. We would get an output, the configuration file output, and we would feed it into the import and publish incidents tool. So you can run this tool manually if you'd like, or as Walt has mentioned, you can set it up using Windows Task Scheduler, and you can update your incident data on a more frequent basis. So now let's start looking at creating some of the maps. Before we're going to start creating maps, I need to create a group. So this group will essentially, we'll save all of our maps to, and then we'll also be using that group to configure the maps and apps gallery, which is basically the fire incident map gallery that Walt had showed you. So I'm going to go ahead and choose an image for my group. I'm going to name it Fire Incident Maps. And I'm also going to provide a summary and a description, so I've already typed that out. And I'll go ahead and add it, as well as tags. And just a note, if you remember when Walt was demonstrating the fire incident maps application, there was a brief description in the upper left-hand corner. That description is actually being pulled from your group. So it would be good to have useful information because that's actually gets represented in the application itself. So I'm going to keep my group private within my organization and save my group. So now that we have our group, we can start creating our maps. So the first map is the incident type. So it's basically symbolized based off of the NIFRS code. So I'll begin by changing the base map to light green canvas, and I'll add my fire incident layer. Once I'm done adding all my layers, I'm going to go ahead and remove all of the layers except for incident type. I'm going to simplify the layer name and rename it to just incident type. And next, I'm going to configure the pop-up. So the pop-up title name is going to be address. And then it's going to pull address information from my full address field. Within the pop-up contents, under display, I'm going to choose a custom attribute display. I've already pre-configured my pop-up information, so I'm going to go ahead and just add it. So for this custom pop-up, information about the incident, the call date, response unit, and description will be displayed when a user clicks on a point. So if we click on the point, you'll see the address information as well as information about the incident type. I'm going to go ahead and save my map as incident type and provide a tag, as well as a summary. So if you recall when Walt was demonstrating the fire incident maps, there was a brief description beside each thumbnail. That description is actually going to be pulled from the map summary. So, and I'll share my map with my fire incident maps group. I'm going to choose not to share my layer with that group, because essentially if I do share it, when I configure the application, that layer is going to be in the gallery and I don't want it to be accessible. I'd rather it just be in the map. So I'm just going to cancel and not share it with the group itself. The second map that we're going to create is response company. So that's going to identify fire incidents by response company. So I'm going to change the base map to light gray canvas and re-add my fire incident layer. I'm going to remove all layers except for responding company. To simplify the layer name, I'll rename it just to responding company. I'll configure the pop-up, so I'll use address as a map-up title, or pop-up title, not map-up title. And then I'll also use display a custom attribute display. I'll add my pop-up information. And for this custom pop-up, information about the response unit, as well as the station, shift, description, and call date will be available. I'll go ahead and save this map as responding company. Provide it a tag, as well as a summary. And then I'll share my map with the fire incident map group. I'll also create labels. So I'm going to use the response unit field to pull that information from. I'm going to change the label to white and center the labels so we can get a better understanding of each responding company using the labels. So I'm going to save my map. Save my map and share it with the group. There we go. So the third map is incident by cause. So I'll go ahead and change the base map to light gray canvas, add my fire incident layer, and remove all the layers except for incident cause. Rename the layer to incident cause. And configure the pop-up using address as the pop-up title and a custom attribute display as the pop-up contents. So in this custom pop-up, information about the incident, the call date, as well as the cause will be provided. I'll go ahead and save my map as incident cause and provide it a title or a tag. Go as well as a summary.
You got a little cheat sheet there.
I do. I didn't think that anybody would want to watch me type. And then again, share it with my fire incident map group. So the fourth and final map will be response time map. So we'll change the base map to light gray canvas, search for my fire incident layer, and remove all of the layers except for response time. I'll read the name, the layer to simplify it, to response time, and configure the pop-up. Again, using address as the pop-up title. And a custom attribute display as the pop-up contents. In this pop-up, information about the incident, the call date, the response unit, as well as the response time will be displayed. So save our final map, response time, and provide it a tag, as well as the summary. So, I gotta share it with my group as well. So now that we have all our maps created, we'll go to our group. So you can see, well, you get the gist. I forgot to share one. So within the group itself, I'll just click share, and then I'll create a web map. And then I'll select the maps and apps gallery. And here I'll name it just fire incident maps and provide it a tag. And as you can see within the app settings, it's pulling all of the maps from the fire incident map group. I'll provide a title for my application, so Fire Incident Maps. I also have a logo that I'd like to use in my application, so I'll add the URL. And then I'll adjust the color scheme to a deep red. Within the gallery settings, you also have other options, so you can choose which layout you'd like to use when the map initially launches, as well as looking at the number of views, the date modified, as well as the names. So I'm going to go ahead and just uncheck to show tag cloud for filtering and save and close my application. So let's view our application. So as you can see, it's very similar to Waltz. You have the description of each of your maps, and then you can still access those maps by just clicking on the thumbnail. Within this application, you can also just search, use the search. You can sort by either views, date, or name, and then you can adjust the layout as well. And obviously, you can customize it to display any maps or applications that you'd like to essentially display within your fire incidents application. So with that said, I'll go ahead and pass it back over to Walt.
So the question came up this morning when we talked about this is, okay, so now that the chief looked at that and he said, that's pretty cool. He played around with it for a few days and he says, what about arsons? What about this or that? So based on what you just saw her do, would you think you know how to answer that? So if you know, like cause, I could search and filter out cause of the incident by arson, create a separate web map just on that filter, and add that web map to that group that she created, and he's going to have his updated map. It's because it's the same data. The key to the whole thing is that whatever's in your RMS is going to come into your local geodatabase and get published. Once it's there, I can slice it and dice it and symbolize it however I want to. So you can see that works, right? The nice thing about this is he doesn't have to mess with GIS. He just, on his iPad, he's got a group that he and very few other people have access to, been invited to it. He can open up that gallery and click around, and that's it, you know. Don't have to have no experience, you know, very, very little training on that. Yeah?
Can I also see that you could make this public?
You could, sure. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Yeah, we have examples of that and other examples.
But
mm-hmm.
You can make it
You might want to check with the chief first, but yeah, you could do that.
Yeah, you'd also, you definitely have to make your feature layer, your map, as well as the application all public in order for it to be accessible.
Okay, so do you think you understand the concept about the whole incident maps, how the script works, and you save that configuration file, you do that one time, the Python script goes and grabs that config file, which has all the parameters, the input parameters and the output parameters and all that. I don't know if we did this, but you can schedule it in Windows Task Scheduler, and there's instructions on there on how to do that. Okay, now I want to take it a step further. Okay, this is, so far what you told me is pretty cool, but I want to, as I showed you earlier with some of those diagrams, I want to kind of get the information out to different people. Got some people in the operations section, some people in the command staff, you know, so on. I want to get the information out to them. How can I get the appropriate maps and apps beyond this one out to those people leveraging ArcGIS Online? So I want to show you a couple things before you leave, just so you know how you can do that. And if you want to, you can stick around and ask questions after that. Okay, so what I'm doing is I went in here to the ArcGIS Online, and all I want to do is click on this one, Learn More About ArcGIS Online Platform. And what this allows you to do is create your own online platform, right? If I click on the Try It Now, I'm going to get open up a thing that looks like this. And this is an example that you can follow. But what if you want to build one, you know, yourself? So I click on Get Started, scroll down here, and it tells you how to create your own online organization. But let's go down to the Fire one. There's some details in here how I can create each of those groups, like the ones that Heather just showed me. And I think you asked the question, well, what if I want to get some information out to the public? So look at this list here. I have a group called Fire Department. Here's its owner. This is all the description information. When you create a group in ArcGIS Online, you're going to need to fill this information out. So what I do is I simply come in here and do like she did, instead of having a cheat sheet, you know, in Notepad, which is a good way to do it. I just come in and copy and paste this off the website into my org, and I got a group. I'll even use the same icon, you know, unless I really want to use a new one. But I can always come back and change the icon later if I want to. So it's just an easy way I can get a group created, copy and paste all the information from here into my organizational account. If I scroll down, I have another one. Here's Fire Department Services. This can have just feature services for fire department, like fire hydrants and AED inspections and things like that. I've got one here for just the administration, so just, you know, command staff, perhaps, or administration people. This fire operations is just for the operations, you know, suppression, you know, EMS divisions. Another one in here for the fire operations and so on. I could have one in here for the public if I wanted to, or one for other departments within my agency, or for an adjacent department, right? Something like that. So you could set up, so this just tells you how to set up the groups. When you do, you'll get one that looks kind of like this. And what I've done here, and you can just scroll through it and see what you want to do, but what I've done here is I'm in there, and I've just went in and I clicked on groups, and I got a list of all my different groups in here. And what I'm going to do is, I'm just going to go over here, you can't see it really good, but I'm going to select fire, just going to do a search on fire. Here's all my groups for fire, just like the ones I just showed you, and this is how I created them. And then I'm going to take what we showed you earlier with fire incident maps, how she showed you how to make a web map, create the several web maps, put them in the group, create the application. Now I've got that maps and gaps Allery application, right? So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go into this one particular group called Fire Administration. And here is where I have a list of all the maps and apps for just the administration, command staff perhaps. You can filter them by just apps if you want to. And one of them that I have in here is called the Fire Chief's Map, Maps and Apps. I'm kind of like you just said, I've taken the same gallery application and put everything that the chief has asked me for into that gallery application. That's, you know, I want to train him. This is all you do, chief. Click on this one button. You ask me for something, I'm going to put it in the same spot. It's a group. I have a group called Fire Administration. Everything, all my apps for that I want the chief to see, go in that group. Nothing changes for him. He doesn't have to go somewhere else, use some other software or nothing like that. It just gets added. So here's the list of all the apps that he can get. So here's like target hazards I talked about earlier. If he wants a station cover map, you ever do, you know, once a year, every couple years, you have to do standards of cover. You guys have to get involved in that. That's a big process, right? Standard of cover is a big issue. One of these days, maybe we'll tackle that one too. But it has a lot to do in there, right? Here's major fires. Let's just take a look at this one. If he has to do his annual report to city council, which they have to do, to get the budget, and they have to defend their budget, what they want to do, one of the things you want to do is you want to get that city council, those people engaged in what you're doing in the fire department, how you're protecting, right? You want to defend your dollars, right? Basically, that's what you're doing. So what you want to do is you want to make a graphic. We took a snapshot, or maybe the media, the newspaper took a snapshot of the fire. We could tell them that fire was, where it was at, it was a stop-and-go convenience store. Here's another one that was at Smith Manufacturing, you can click on them. You can get some more information. The resolutions really messed this up, but anyway. If I click on it here, you can get some more information about, you can see the graphic a little bit better. So what I'm doing basically is I'm taking a picture, you could take a video, that'd be even more effective, tie it to a location where that fire was, give a little story on it, and this is just going into a little app here that the chief has on his little, that Maps and App Gallery. All the fire chief maps, right? So he's got his place to go, the one-stop shop. He can have everything he wants in there. And he can sit down in front of city council and say, remember that fire that happened back in January? It was near your house. We responded to that one. We put it out. We saved the people's lives. So on. He can tell the story. So this is a tool that he can use. So that one's called Major Fires. But there's a bunch of them on here, like fire run books. Here's an online run book. So instead of having that map book printed out in a PDF, you can put it online. And once it's online, and it can go on an iPad. Everything here can be searched from an iPad or something like that. Hydrant inspections, all that stuff that's in here. So, including the app that she just showed you how to build goes in here too as well. So this is this fire incident map is the one that she just did. So you can go in here. Everything you want to can be put into here, and you do that by creating those groups. Now to get started, all you do here is just go back to your local government. You select back to fire service, and this is where you can come in and you say, okay, I want to go to the online platform, learn more. That's where you get started. Okay, I did promise you one other thing, the service catalog, so let's go back to that. To get to the service catalog, for those of you that are, if you spend a lot of time creating feature services in RTS Online, and you're thinking, somebody must have done this before, and I'm hoping I don't have to create the symbols and all the attributes and stuff like that. So go look to documentation. When you go into the documentation, you get a list of all of our apps, including this link here to the service catalog. Click on that, go in here and say learn more. We've got time here. Got a few more minutes. So we have a few things in here we can look at, like bridges and AEDs and all the stuff that's in this damage assessment. So on, right? So I'm just going to take damage assessments because it's right here, and sometimes fire guys get involved in damage assessments. Okay, so, a storm came through in the middle of the night, tornado came through. Next morning, we got to go through this community, check, make sure everybody's safe. After the response stuff is done, we can go into the recovery mode. Now we can start collecting damage assessment stuff. So just to give you an example. So what I need to do then is I can either open up this service definition. I'm in a group called the Service Catalog, and it has all these services that we, the ESRI Solutions team, has put in here for you guys to be able to use. So I can open it up and take a look at it in web map or in desktop, like you see here. But what I really want to do to save time is I'm going to go into the details here and show you what it looks like. Now, they've redone this item page like 2 weeks ago. So it's a little bit different, but I think it's way better. I like it a lot. I don't know about you, but I really like this a lot better. I think this is a vast improvement. So you can look in here and see what the description looks like. Go take a look at the data. Here's all the fields that come with the service definition that are already created for you. If you want to, you can come in here and do the visualization. And by the way, you're looking at the person that creates all these symbols right here. She's the one that creates when we need them. So she creates these. And so you can see that there are different categories for different types. So in this particular situation with damage assessment, this one's built to meet the FEMA requirements because there's two reimbursement programs for FEMA, right? You have the individual assistance reimbursement program and the public assistance. Within individual assistance, there's two things you can do. You can get help on commercial buildings or on residential buildings, right? And if you meet your thresholds, each state has a different threshold per capita, then you can get help from FEMA, and it can be either a gubernatorial, state declared emergency, or presidential declared emergency if you meet that criteria. Well, as you can imagine, after FEMA's been, all the money they've had to fork out over the last 10 years or so, they're going to make you prove. This is a good way to prove that you've met those thresholds, those dollar thresholds, to be able to get those declarations so you can get funding through one of those two programs. And so the symbology and schema has been designed for that purpose. Okay? So now what I want to do, I'm going to go back to my overview. I want to use this, I want to put it in my org. So what you do is go grab in here, say this is the URL, this is the REST endpoint. This is where you go and get the service definition. And, you know, you can scroll down here and look at the extent, the drawing info, the symbolization, and all that. But I'm going to go up here and just copy it. Then I'm going to go in, and I'm going to log into my org, my development org, so don't use my login password, all right? And I'm going to go in there and create a layer using that feature service, just so you see how to do it. So I go into my contents, and I'm going to say create feature layer. Now there's a couple ways you can do it. You can select one of these templates. There's a lot of them. There's AEDs and all kinds of things in here. If you scroll down, there's more pages of it that you can't see because of the resolution there. And also you can see all the other layers that I have in my org. I can take one of those layers. But in this case, I'm going to say from a URL and paste in that URL from that REST endpoint. Select create new. And what it's doing is grabbing three, in this case there are three layers. Remember the ones I told you about, the commercial, residential, public facilities. Click next. Now I can go into my jurisdiction where I'm at. And because I live in the Twin Cities, I'm going to zoom into that area. And say, all right, I want to click it. I want to create it for this area. And say, damage. Oops, sorry. Call it fire. And it just created a new feature service in my org that's empty, that has the schema, that has the symbology to meet those requirements from FEMA, right? And now you can see, here's my new service definition. It's my area here. It has a description and stuff like that. One thing you can do on these, especially like for damage assessment, when you're doing damage assessment, you might want to take a picture of the building. So you can enable attachments or disable attachments so that they can, as they go along, and with the collector, because I'm going to put this on a web map that I can access from collector on my iPhone. So as I go along with collector, I can say, okay, here's where I'm at. All the attributes are all already filled out for you. So you can say how bad's the damage, you know, and all that kind of stuff. It's all in there for you. The schema's in there. We have domains, so there's pick lists. And then you can take a picture of the thing, attach that to that particular building, and go on and move to the next one. So the service catalog can be a very valuable thing and save you a lot of time. If you find yourself in there a lot trying to create new service definitions and web maps and messing around with that, it's a place to start. You know, you can modify it if you need to. So any questions so far? All this stuff? We showed you a lot of stuff here, but I thought we should do an overview this year of what it was. But we also drilled down into how to create individual web maps, how to create an application and stuff like that. We hope it's helpful. I hope you leave here feeling like, well, I got something out of it, you know, some value out of it. I also want to say a couple of more things here is that I'm not going to take this too much longer because we've already spent a lot of time. We just showed you one of many. There are some new applications, some applications in here that we're going to be updating. These are new ones. The ones that are in blue here, we've updated here. We're going to be updating pre-incident planning and so on. This is the whole system view of it, right? So I had a service definition. I copied into my org. I created web maps. From that, I created apps for different departments. I put them in groups so they could access them. So that's just kind of how you see it work there. So what do you do when you get started? Well, the first thing you have to decide is, what do I want to do? Do I want to take the whole system? Do I want to just take, like, publish and adopt like I just did with that service definition? I just wanted to publish it and make a web map. You know, maybe I just want to do one. Or maybe I want to customize. You know, I don't like the way you guys did, you know, the incident maps or something. I don't know. You can go to GitHub, grab the code, bring it in, modify it if you're a coder and you like to do that. So there's three different options where you can do that. But I would say is find the biggest business need. What is it you need to do? It's quick and easy. Somebody asked me this last year, where should I start? I said fire hydrants. That's an easy one. Everyone needs to do the fire hydrant inspections. Just grab the service definition, create a web map, go out and start collecting. Or damage assessments is another one. Anyway, so find what you can do. Step through the process. I have one down at the bottom. I don't mean to tell you what to do. This is one idea. You know, start hiding inspections. Feed into the plane is another one. You have to do that out in the field anyway, so you might as well just start with an empty feature and service and start collecting. And then you can do some things like fire incident maps like we just showed you. Target hazard analysis is a little bit more complicated. I'd leave that one for a while. You know, do that one later. And you can do some other things later if you wanted to. So that's an overview of what you want to do. I should put this in presentation mode so you can see it. What else? I want to tell you about some things that are coming. We're going to be working on community events. I may have mentioned that. Planning for the integration with the incident action plan for security and all that kind of stuff for events. We're going to be working on that. We're going to make that available to the fire service page that you saw earlier, to law enforcement, and to emergency management, because all those parties are involved when it gets involved, when it comes to a big event. So we'll be working on that. That's going to be next. That's the next highest priority. Later, I'm going to be working on preemptive planning. It's probably going to be more of a procedure-driven instead of just like, okay, publish your stuff like you can do right now. A little bit more process-oriented, like, you know, what are the steps, like assigning shifts and crews to where they need to go, collecting that, monitoring the status, how they're collecting the information. So we know that when they go to respond to an incident there, you know, they're safe. If they're going to go to a big box store, we know if there's lightweight trusses up there, they're going to melt at a certain heat so they don't get trapped in there, stuff like that. We're probably going to be doing some things beyond that. I think there could be multiple variations of it, one for fire, one for law enforcement, because for law enforcement, you got an active shooter. It's a little bit different than responding to a fire, so you need to have collected other information. And there's a process that's involved with that that's a little bit different. So that's a couple things we're going to be working on. I also want to say, I want to invite you, that if you're interested, to get involved in any of those, to let us know. We'd love to get your input. Often I do web meetings. I just set up a schedule, set up an hour-long meeting, show you what we got, you show me what you got, tell me what works, what doesn't work. It's valuable hopefully for both of us, but I certainly get a lot out of those. So this is where you can get some more information. You can get involved. First is the solutions.rfgs.com. That's what we've been showing you all in this session. So that's a good place for you to start. You can look at all the solutions there, learn more, get into service catalog, all that stuff. In the middle there are meetups. Heather also does the, you do a lot of stuff for us, don't you?
I do a lot of things behind the scenes.
Yes, you do. Very much. So she moderates, I guess that's what that's the term. She moderates our sessions, our meetups. So meetups are occasions for us to get together as a community. The local government group has many meetups, once a month, I think. And yep. Once in a while, about once a quarter or so, we do one for fire. Or maybe it's not that often. A couple times a year, we do it for fire. And so if you want to, you could go to meetups.com. That's all you got to do. Go to meetups.com and search, click on the Find button and type in ArcGIS, that's probably a bunch I did, and you'll get a list of them. ArcGIS for local government, ArcGIS for state government, ArcGIS for emergency management. If you go to the local government one or any of the other ones and just say, I want to, you know, get on the list, sign up, it'll ask you for your email address and stuff, and then, you know, it's a bio, who you are, or whatever you do, or something like that, and then you'll find yourself in a community, and it'll send you an invite to the next meetup, and you can choose whether you want to participate in that meetup or not. So you accept or decline and add it to your calendar. And when it comes, it'll give you a reminder. How do you log in? All that kind of stuff. When you get on the list, you'll see a whole bunch of people. It can be, sometimes there are all over 200 people in some of our meetups online. Or if you happen to live near Redlands or Southern California, you can come to our office and be there with our staff to do that. And so that's some things about meetup, a couple of ways that you can do that and get involved.
Also to mention, there's also recordings of past meetups as well. Right. So there are a few related to fire, so you can watch those as well.
That's a good point. We record them all. And then over on the right, again, if you're a solution developer, you go to esri.github.com, and if we have custom code, you can go and copy that code down, customize it if you want to, and so on. So there's a couple ways to get involved. So the other thing I wanted to tell you about is here's some other events. The Demo Theater 13 is where, I don't know if you're doing any, are you in 13 too?
Yes.
Okay, so 13, Demo Theater 13 is where you can go if you're interested in specific things. Tomorrow I'm doing one on pre-incident planning and one on community events. They're late in the day, but you can come to that if you want to. They're good. There is a special interest group meeting tomorrow for local government, all of local governments, for not just fire. And that's at noon. I think that's in 6A, I believe. You can search for it on your app if you want to. We also have a social going on tomorrow night, 5:30. I think it's over at the Hilton Promenade over there, so you can come over and join us there. And then we're down at the Solution Island. There's a big roundabout up at the top. It's red. It says government. Right underneath there, that's where we work, and we're there. Another way to find us is if you go out in the lobby down on the lower floor, go into door B1, B as in boy, come right in that way, and we're right front and center there. So you can find us if you have follow-up questions or whatever. So that's pretty much it. If you want to, here's how you can take a survey. So you just go there, select on the music conference, search for the schedule, and find the solution, and scroll down, and it'll ask you the questions in. So. Thanks a lot for coming and being
Thank you.
Patient and appreciative.